Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation, sometimes even the great debate, but it can only be either if you join in. Here's how it works. You call us and we'll call you back. We'll establish a clear line. And remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero or I'll have to move on. So the number is 44208-601-4555. You call us, we'll call you back. You can also SMS the show on 4478-00-8066. And the best of those, if they're good enough, will come up there on the comment wall. Ditto with emails, comment@presstv.co.uk. You can even tweet us at @comment_presstv. Two big questions this evening. By convicting Anjem Chowdhury, are the British finally getting serious about tackling fanatic Takfiri extremism in the United Kingdom? I'll say a bit more about him later. And the other subject with which I'm going to start is this. Is suffering in Syria politicized? Well, it could hardly be denied that the propaganda war seizes immediately on any image which it believes can benefit its own cause. The latest of those was the little boy, Omran, pictured in an ambulance, apparently alone, though in fact the ambulance seats were all filled with other children who'd been hurt or at least shocked and traumatized by an explosion. The official story was that the dazed and shell-shocked boy, who was not physically injured but of course mentally terrorized by his experience, had been caused by a Russian bomb. The Russians fairly convincingly disproved that by pictures of the buildings in which the boy had been sheltering, where the windows had not been broken. So it would appear to have been a different kind of munition, most probably a mortar shell, not fired by Russians, but fired most likely by the Syrian army, although you cannot rule out that it was a gas IED belonging to the so-called rebels fighting Syria, fighting the Syrian authorities and the Syrian army. Whoever was responsible for the boy's shock and horror, no one, unless they had a heart of stone, would not be moved by the sight of a little boy covered in dust and with blood caked on his face. He was, however, physically uninjured, unlike the 12-year-old boy who had been, there's no other way of putting this, decapitated on video by people who put it out on YouTube thinking it was a good look. I mention that because the man who took the picture of little Omran in the ambulance is an associate of the people who cut the head off the little boy. At least he posed for pictures with two of them after the crime had been committed. We showed this footage earlier. There they are. They're these big, brave men. Look how they're tormenting this little child just before they cut his head off. Now, two of these murderers, the photographer, who describes himself as a war photographer, but is in fact a political activist in support of that group who murdered that little 12-year-old boy, he posed for pictures with two of the brutal decapitators that you've just seen in that footage. That's a side issue, of course. But the reality is that these kind of pictures and this kind of propaganda moves into overdrive when the terrorists are being defeated. as they currently are in Aleppo. After all, these terrorists have held the eastern part of Aleppo, one of the great and ancient Arab cities, for years. They have been shelling the people, including children, in western Aleppo, under the control of the Syrian government, for years, but nobody ever wanted to take, or at least to publish, a picture of the children dying on the other side. So there is no doubt in my mind that those who are responsible for this carnage in Syria have a very keen appreciation and a willing market in the Western media for their propaganda images. We'll see if my first caller agrees. It's Amar Wakaf who's on the line. He's the director and founder of Gnosos, which is a Greek word which means knowledge that has to be gotten out, which is somehow hidden or concealed. If I've got that right, it's a long time since I studied Greek, Amar. Go ahead.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Thanks for having me. Yes, well, the Greek word is actually gnosis, so this one is a bit of a derivative out of it, but it is based on that. It's about deeper knowledge that you wouldn't find on the surface. You have to dig a little bit. And what we do is that we provide stakeholder opinion on Syria and the Middle East. We specialize in the story that nobody seems to be wanting to hear in the West, which is the many Syrians who believe that the so-called revolution wasn't a jolly good thing. Going back to your issue, the kids, Omran, Dakhnish. I personally cried when I posted the video on my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. It's very heartbreaking. You cannot. I mean, some people went as far as suggesting that this is all fake and something, but
not at all. No, no.
Really,
I certainly don't mean to suggest that at all. Yeah. And as the father of young boys myself, I also cried, Amma.
Yeah, I would suspect that every sensible person would do that, and for me it's just a reminder of how harsh the reality of the war is in my country, Syria. Now, you're spot on in your introduction about this war, so-called war photographer. It was interesting to see so many photographers waiting for this guy or for this kid to be carried out into the ambulance, and one couldn't but ask himself or herself whether Omran had to wait under the rubble a little bit until those photographers...
Until the cameras were assembled, yes.
Yes. Now the issue is that when the Nurettin Zenki beheaded kid, who nobody knows his name actually, when the incident took place, it was because the Nurettin Zenki is an Western-affiliated sort of rebel movement that everybody wants to call this moderate. You could probably see one or two articles here in the UK.
Not many, buried, because I looked for them.
Yes, buried deep inside newspapers and everything. But when Omran ordeal took place, it was on the front page of almost single one of them.
I'd go further, Amar. I'll say that 99% of the British people have never seen that picture we've just looked at of the 12-year-old boy about to be beheaded by these savage beasts, calling themselves humans, beasts in human form. 99% of the British people will never have seen those images or even know of their existence, whilst 99% of the British people saw the picture, the heartbreaking picture, of the little boy Omran.
Yeah, there is no doubt whatsoever that, you know, the media here is taking every single opportunity to mobilize public opinion in a certain direction rather than tell them exactly what is going on. I mean, sometimes you would have the odd picture or the odd ordeal from the other side, takes, you know, it just escapes everyone and goes up then everybody disowns it. They say, well, this is like an individual mistake. It
yes,
doesn't
yes,
represent
yes.
and it's not reflective and so on. But actually...
Like the Heart Eater, for example. The Heart Eater was a member of a group receiving money from Britain and the United States whilst he filmed himself eating someone's heart.
Yeah, Abu Sakkar, yes. It's pure and simple FSA, the moderate thing. And, you know, there's no end to this at the end of the day, but we need to keep, you know, our heads down and try to make the public aware that there is a whole lot of people on the other side in Syria who are also suffering. But these people, for some reason, and they don't even ask people here in Britain, for example, they just get this, how do you say, impression that they know all the truth, but actually they don't even know half of the truth. There is a lot of suffering on the other side as well. And the issue is, if I may go on for 1 minute more, it's that the beheading of the kid by the Nurdin Zinki, which is an Islamic extremist sort of organization, really epitomizes the whole struggle that we're having in Syria. It is this ruthless Islamic extremism that a lot of people have not joined with the revolution, quote unquote, in order to fight. Everybody knew, or not everybody, but many people knew from the very beginning that this was going to lead to more extremism. And this extremism is going to be fueled by the Gulf states and so on and so forth. So everybody, well, half, at least half of Syrians did not join up or sign up for this. And the beheading itself is reflective of this very fact, the nature, the true nature of the revolution, quote unquote. And so people need to understand this is not only an atrocity, it's just an occasion to reflect on the true nature of what is really going
exactly.
on in Syria.
It is entirely emblematic of not just the conflict in Syria, but the conflict across the world. This battlefield stretches from northeast Nigeria all the way to the Maghreb. It stretches to Southeast Asia, to Malaysia and Indonesia and other places, perhaps Thailand also. This is a mortal struggle against those who believe that the emblem of the cutting off of people's heads has anything to do with Islam. The only point on which I demur, Amar, is it's not Islamic extremism. It's certainly extremism which those practicing it claim to be Islamic. But anyone who knows anything at all about Islam, about the line of the Prophet, including on issues of war, knows that there is nothing at all Islamic about it. Amar Waqaf, director and founder of Gnosis, thank you very much indeed for joining us. I talked earlier about Aleppo. It's a city that I know well. It was a jewel of the Orient. It was one of the most magical, mesmerizing places I have ever been. It is now, of course, utterly destroyed, brick by brick, stone by stone. Now let's take a call from Mo in the UK on this subject. Go ahead, Mo.
Hi, George.
Hello, sir. Go ahead.
Your question is the Syria conflict politicized?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes.
George, your mate, Ed Miliband, is head of IRC, International Rescue Committee. that tells you humanitarian agencies are politicized. The head of the UN Humanitarian Agency, a British politician, was parachuted into that job, which is traditionally what's been happening. So every humanitarian agency in the world is politicized because they receive government funding. So Syria is no exception to this. You see, UN Watch organization, a Israeli-funded organization, which has criticized Syria, the government of Syria, And you can tell that these are all politicized issues. You can see from the UN report today condemning the Syrian government for the chemical attacks without any proof that's been shown to the world. And this has been happening all the time, George. Now, regarding the young, the little child, Omran, 5 years old, I'm an ex-soldier. I've been in combat and I've seen battlefield injuries. And I'll tell you, that was staged. That was like a mock exercise. They placed a child on a seat in the ambulance. No doctor or nurse has looked at him or tried to help him. They've just put him there so the photographers can take photographs. This is a staged event. I'll tell you now that there was no actual injuries. There's no blood on the child's face, and the child is not shocked at all. That is staged. And we must not accept everything that we see on our screens or we hear about, because most of these issues reported by Western media are staged. And they are, well, we can see this from Libya. The Qatari government set up a whole area, which a square, which looked like it was in Tripoli in Libya, but it was actually in Qatar. And it looked like the demonstrators against Gaddafi were demonstrating out there, but it actually wasn't in Libya. It wasn't in Tripoli. I know this for a fact. I was there. I didn't see it. So not in Qatar, but in Libya. So I'm saying these are staged events, and we must condemn them and not accept everything we see.
Okay, Mo, a good call, provocative one, but that's what we like on the show. This is, after all, intended to be a debate. There's only 2 points on which I must demur. The first is that David Miliband certainly ain't my mate and never ever has been, but he is the head of a so-called NGO, which is in fact a GO. And you're right to say that actually now I'd go so far as to say that almost all NGOs are no longer NGOs, but are GOs, because he who pays the piper calls the tune, and the governments that are putting vast sums of money through these so-called NGOs certainly would not tolerate for 1 minute any differentiation from the prevailing orthodoxy, from the party line. In that sense, it is true that sometimes, I stress sometimes, not in the majority of cases, sometimes these so-called NGOs are little more than a Trojan horse to carry out the policies to get inside the gates, inside the walls, in a way that the foreign governments that are funding them would not be able to do. And there's no doubt that they play ball at the very least. They may even precipitate it or proactively will it, but they at the very least play ball with the prevailing orthodoxy of the state or states that are paying them increasingly handsomely, I may say. I don't agree with you that the picture was staged. Neither you nor I know, we weren't there, but the child looked shocked to me. And I am not prepared to say that the picture was staged. I am saying that the picture was used. It was politicized. It was used for propaganda purposes. It was taken by an evil and wicked man, a man who rubs shoulders with the individuals who cut the head off that tiny child. We say he was 12 years old, but I must say he looked a lot less than 12 years old to me. And so I'm not going to remain silent in the face of that picture or the suffering, which is undoubtedly occurring on both sides, as our last guest said, on both sides of this conflict, there is enormous, horrific suffering. I blame the people who are fueling it, who are paying for it, who are weaponizing it, who are using it, who don't give a damn for this little boy or any other little boy who has been harmed by this Syrian conflict. For them, this is about a game of political chess. Mo, thanks for the call. Zachary is in Aberdeen in Scotland. Let's hear from him. Zachary, go ahead.
Good evening, Mr. George Bellamy.
Good evening.
Talking about the sheer of the barbarity that is carrying out against the Syrian nation and the Palestinian nation and the and some people in Yemen and in Bahrain and Iraq, I would like to ask from the entire humanity that hear me, pray every minute for the Syrian nation, Iraqi nation, and the Palestinian nation, and the Shia of Yemen, and the Bahrain, and the Hejaz. And only asking from Allah to save these nations in the Middle East. Because the Shia of the barbarity is out of the control now. And they are using this scenery to, because they are defeated, being defeated, then they are using this to regain and defeat their opposition and the Syrian nation and the Syrian army and the Bashar Assad by affliction of the people. And this is what is it. And I hope the people in the Europe and in America gather together, come together, and organize one institution. Still, I say this is the only way to save the Middle East from the horrific crime that, in order to repair all these damages, takes 3-4 centuries. The sheer of the barbarity is beyond imagination, and it is required the entire humanity, every nation, press their government to press those governments that are supporting Daesh in Middle East, and cut every relation with this government. This is the only way that the people, they can help the innocent people in
yes.
Syria.
Yes, well, there's no doubt about that, Zachary. Equally, there's no doubt that we're a very, very long way away from achieving that. If the people of the United States knew that their government was now directly assisting Al-Qaeda in Syria, the very Al-Qaeda that caused so much suffering in the United States, one presumes that they would rise up against it. The media conspires and the political class conspire to ensure that they do not know it. The same is true in Britain, though more people today in the United States and in Britain know the truth, because ignorance is an option now. It's a choice. If you want to know the truth, you can find the truth, but you've got to go looking for it. Thanks for that call. I'm discussing the propagandization of suffering in Syria, and later I'm talking about the final conviction of one of Britain's most notorious extremists. I'll be right back, God willing. You're watching Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Tonight we're discussing the propaganda use of the suffering in Syria and asking, is that suffering being politicized? In a way, it's a no-brainer, because it obviously is. But just why the Western media are so brazen and blatant and one-sided about that suffering is still capable of drawing my breath away, even though I've been witnessing that media for decade after decade. But I'm also discussing and concentrating in the second half of the show the conviction this week of Anjum Chowdhury. Just for those who are watching around the world who have never heard of this man, unfortunately, everybody in Britain has heard of him. He was your standard rent-a-mouth Muslim extremist to whom every media outlet beat a path over and over and over again. Whenever any fanatic extremist comment was helpful to the people who hate Muslims in Britain, this man could be guaranteed to turn up for the show. So much so that for many years, many of us believed he must be an agent of the British state. Simply must be, because as you can see, he is that rent-a-mouth. If you wanted someone to say something to make everybody in Britain afraid of Islam and hating Muslims, he was the go-to guy. He's finally been convicted of allegiance to the so-called ISIS, so-called Al-Qaeda caliphate that was founded by the fake Caliph al-Baghdadi. This man undoubtedly was a supporter of ISIS. He undoubtedly influenced a large number of people, perhaps 500 of the 850 extremists who are believed to be fighting with ISIS in Syria and Iraq. He almost certainly was influential with at least 500 of those. He has been convicted in a very peculiar trial, I must say, one which was held largely in secret, the authorities said, because it would have prejudiced another trial, but I haven't seen that convincingly reported anywhere. So we only got snippets in the newspapers of the trial, but it's quite likely that he will now go to prison for many years, perhaps as many as 10 years. Of course, putting him in prison doesn't solve the problem either, because there he will have 24/7 the ability to continue the extremization, the so-called radicalization of others that he can send, not only into harm's way themselves, but to cause harm for the rest of us. I have a long history with this man. His group kidnapped me, locked the door, only me and a group of old age pensioners, my young daughter and her then baby in her arms, and they threatened on video to kill me. They threatened to hang me in that room. I was also attacked by his group at a motorway service station at Leicester Forest service station. I loathe and despise Anjum Chowdhury, but I despise him more because of the damage that he did to Muslims and to Islam in Britain. Let's hear from Masood Shajari, who's the chair of the Islamic Human Rights Commission. Masood, welcome to the show. How do you react to the final conviction of Chowdhury? Do you think this means that the British are finally getting serious?
Good evening. I think really is too little, too late. And really, what made Anjum Chowdhury sort of so infamous right across Britain was really the media, which promoted him. He was definitely not promoted by the Muslim community. And if anything, you know, every time they organized anything, you know, there were a handful of people.
Yeah, his demonstrations used to gather 50 people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So really, they had no real influence on Muslims, But unfortunately, they were being used. I mean, him in particular and his colleagues were being used by the media to demonize Muslim community and really by the establishment for very, very long time. And it served them extremely well. I mean, I remember sort of 2 years ago when they organized a demonstration, a sectarian demonstration outside in Edgware Road. And at the time when we saw the publicity for that, we sort of urged the Metropolitan Police to make sure that this thing would not go on because it would create huge havoc in Edgware Road. And not only the Metropolitan Police allowed it to go ahead, but they only put two police officers to protect the ordinary people in the Edgware Road. And can you imagine if the same demonstration was going to be organized in Finchley or Hammersmith, where, you know, huge Jewish community lives, rather than Edgware Road, where is the Arab community, they would have definitely would have put three or four policemen for every single one of these demonstrators. That actually shows that that was serving them their purpose, and the reality is that that has been going on for a very long time. Every time they wanted to make mockery and sort of expose and give demonization justification to Muslims, they brought him to the Newsnight, they brought him to Channel 4. He was really being taken all over, and indeed, no prosecution against him whatsoever. So really, I think to some extent, I am as much as... it is good to see that they eventually have made an effort, but I have to say that is very too little too late. The damage is already done. I mean, we are seeing characters like Anjum being used in the process of not creating but strengthening this environment of hate, which is being promoted by the politician, by the media using characters like Anjum and sort of propaganda. And then on the other side of it, we've got sort of the darling of the Westminster and the government, so-called Muslim organizations, which actually, you know, dance to every tune that the sort of the government and the Home Office wants to play. And combination of these two are creating a huge problem for the society, and in particular in representation, genuine representation of Muslim community.
What do you make, Masood, of the statement that was made by the police? I don't know if it was on the record or off the record, but it clearly came from the police, that the British security services repeatedly stopped them from making a move against Anjum Chowdhury because, of course, the security services had many people inside his group. I mentioned my clash with them at the service station at Leicester Forest. The cadre who attempted to attack me there was later, by his own admission, unmasked. He called a press conference to unmask himself as an agent of Danish, United States, and British intelligence. And he was a right-hand man of Anjum Chowdhury. So clearly the intelligence community had people in his organization, in his circle. And you could see the case, couldn't you, that this might be helpful when he was clearly directing people down the path of terrorism. That doesn't exculpate the media, whom you rightly excoriate for their endless platforming of this man to say the most extreme and fanatic things, but it might exculpate the police. What do you say?
Well, we know that the intelligence services actually create environments like that to sort of attract, like a honey thing, attract sort of people that might be attracted to these types of people so they could watch them and they could identify them. But, you know, the problem is this, that a combination of that and a combination of media actually created a huge personality, which has probably individually contributed to the sort of demonization of Muslim community more than any other individual from so-called Muslim community.
And it didn't stop 850 fools from heading from Britain, Scotland, England and Wales, and I suppose the north of Ireland, headed to go and kill, and a lot of them die in someone else's country very far away.
No, and you know, also, you know, when you look at those numbers, then, you know, what comes to mind is two cases that went to court. And on both of those cases, the court threw out these individual cases of being involved in act of terrorism and for being going and helping the so-called extremists in Syria, terrorist groups in Syria, because our government were actually supporting those groups.
That's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Masoud Shajari, chair of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, thanks for joining us on The Comment this evening. Let's take a look at the very same Anjum Chowdhury, now about to disappear, thank God, from our screens for the next 10 years or so.
The mainstream media made Anjum Chowdhury the huge personality that he was. They used him for incendiary anti-British pro-terrorist soundbites, with the subtext being that all Muslims are like that. For example, here he is defending the beheading of an off-duty British soldier.
They were targeting specifically a soldier. And indeed, the Quran says that, you know, if they fight against you, retaliate. So if people are killing Muslims, for example, in Muslim countries, then there is a school of thought which says that this is allowed in retribution. Now, I don't follow that opinion, but I can understand why somebody would do something like this.
His prominence on the mainstream media was a constant source of frustration for British Muslims. While he wasn't welcome in mosques and Muslim institutions, he was a regular on TV news bulletins and debate shows. At most, Chowdhury must have had a few hundred hardcore supporters around the country. Yet he was probably the most famous Muslim in the UK in the eyes of many non-Muslims. The mainstream media are going to miss him. Who else will they find who's so ready available to play the role of the Muslim bad guy? But troubling questions remain. Why was Chowdhury allowed to get away with blatant support for terrorism for so long? Why was his trial held in secret? And will his conviction lead to the further persecution of those who insist on voicing legitimate foreign policy grievances?
Well, these are, of course, all of them important questions. Let's continue the discussion. Farouk is on the line in London. Go ahead, Farouk. Welcome.
Welcome. Assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum salam.
As to do the Middle East, George, we know that, you know, America's bidding and the West all together. Is like, he was watching a program with me on one of the satellite channels where they mentioned that America must always be in control of 50% of the world resources. Always. So, you know, all this, you know, we see what happened to Egypt through a democratic election. They overthrew the government within 10 months. And then we have like a dictator that's taken over in the person of General Sisi. And we know that he killed more person in a day in a normal demonstration. 1,000 people died. And, you know, if you see what happened to Libya, if you see what's happening now, they tried the same with Syria, to the intervention of Russia, that changed the picture. It's all politics, you know, geopolitics, and nothing to do with human rights or justice or whatever. And going back to that little boy that was fired, I mean, like you said, this is happening to all parts on both sides of the fence. It's not just a one-off.
Yeah, but it only gets weaponized in support of the worst people on the earth, the fanatics who are destroying Syria as we speak. Farouk, thanks for the call. Let's go from London up to Scotland and talk with David. David, welcome. Hello, David.
How you doing? The problem with Islam is not Islam itself, and the problem with the Quran is not the Quran itself. The problem is the misrepresentation of Islam and also the misrepresentation of the Quran. Because someone subscribes to Islam does not mean he represents Islam.
No, of course not. That's right.
You understand? And the problem happening in the Middle East, what's happening in the Middle East at the moment is what happened in our continent 250 years ago. You understand? Internal religious wars within Christianity. You understand? That's internal religious wars within Islam. And the problem is, back in 250 years ago, the Muslims did not come over here and involve themselves in our internal Christian wars. But the Christians, the Christian countries, believe that they can go over to the Middle East and interfere with internal religious wars over there.
Okay, Dave, thanks for that. I've got to press on, but I've got to say this to you. Don't imagine that the leaders of the so-called Christian countries are Christians. Christians believe in the prophets, peace be upon them. Our leaders believe in the prophets and how to get a bigger piece of them. Let's stay in Scotland, over in Peterhead, and go to Robert, the youngest, wisest young man in Christendom. Go ahead, Robert.
Good evening, George.
Good evening to you. Go on.
So I first heard about Anjem Choudhury when I was roughly around about 11 years old. I mean, you'd see him in the news all the time, you'd see him in the papers and all that. And at that time, I really wasn't that politically active, but you'd hear about him you'd hear about him all the time in the newspapers. But the thing is, Choudhury, I totally despise him. I totally despise him and everything that he has done, everything that he said, and it's pretty much been proven. It was proven long before now that he had been inviting support for Daesh.
And sure,
had been,
yeah. No doubt about it.
No doubt about it at all. He'd been encouraging people to go over and, quote-unquote, fight for the Khilafah. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, the Khilafah does not exist. ISIS is not a caliphate. It is an insult to Islam and it's an insult to Muslims. And Choudhury is insulting the Muslim population the world over by asking them to support people who besmirch the name of Islam, spit on it, and insult the prophets of Islam and insult the Quran, and just inviting them. That is, how can the mainstream media call Choudhury a Muslim? He's not a Muslim.
Well, of course, he was a very useful idiot for them, and he performed 1,000 times on the front pages, not just of the downmarket tabloids where he was a comic opera bogeyman, but also on the so-called respectable BBC TV and Channel 4 and the rest. Thanks, Robert, as always. Julian is in London. Let's hear from him. Go ahead, Julian.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
The politicisation of suffering in Syria.
Yes.
Omran Dakhnish, whose photo went viral.
Yes.
That was taken by a photographer who posed with and hung around with the militants who executed and beheaded a different young boy, a 12-year-old boy, from the city of Aleppo, whose name I don't even know because the media
didn't tell you, didn't even report it, Julian.
Well, there you go. But a 12-year-old boy from Aleppo, I think he was of Palestinian background, was beheaded
in a refugee camp. We only know about it, Julian, because the people that cut the little boy's head off filmed themselves doing it and put it out.
Yeah, disgusting.
It is disgusting. That's the best word. Best
but it's
way
also politicized.
Describing
exactly. It's both.
How's that for politicizing? Julian, thanks for the call. I'm going to Zimbabwe. I want to talk with Thomas there. It's been a while since I've spoken with Zimbabwe. Thomas, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. George Galloway.
Good evening, sir. Go on.
All right, thank you. My comment is this. I just want Iran, Russia, China to join hands to fight these warmongers, these people of figure blood. Until when world waiting for these people to make nonsense, playing around with nonsense people? Please, tell Dr. Putin, Iran, to fight these warmongers. Please, this is my comment.
I didn't actually catch it because the line is unclear. Just give me the bull point again, Thomas.
My point is, I just want Russia, Iran, North Korea, China to join hands and fight these Americans and the British and their friends in Saudi Arabia.
No, I'm sorry, Thomas. I'm not getting that. Call us back another time, because I do want to talk to you. Now, the Islam and Muslims are, of course, never out of the news. And new and ever more fiendish, though sometimes farcically fiendish, efforts to ridicule Islam or oppress it are invented. You couldn't get a more powerful one than this, the banning of the burkini in France, a real French farce, where women are being arrested at gunpoint by police officers because they've got too many clothes on. Can you believe it? Well, you don't have to take my word for it. The social media is filled with the images this week of a woman with her child on the beach in Nice being arrested by four armed policemen with guns, men with guns, being arrested because she was dressed like that. Like any grandmother would be on the beach, anywhere. This woman is being arrested because she had that blue top on over her own body, a body which belongs to her and created by God, whilst terrorism remains a clear and present danger in France. You'd think those police officers had rather more important things to do, wouldn't you? Meanwhile, the sales of the burkini are going through the roof. Marks and Spencer's in Britain have sold out. And millions of people, I'll tell you what should happen. All men, all women in France who are decent, free French men and women should put a burkini on and head for the beaches of the south of France and wreck this obscene and absurd attack on Muslim women in France, because it could lead to disaster. Continue the discussion on Twitter. Comment _ Press TV. It's been marvellous. Thank you.
Hello, if you just comment your name and the question, you left that number. And just make sure that your television volume
is set to 0. 0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know, and actually, you need to put through this phone number, and then we'll be back.
Comment. Can I have your telephone number?
Okay, so I'll just comment after this.